This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome to the morning run and good morning. We're back to having our regular show from 6 to 10 a.m. every day, which means at 7 a.m. we take a look at the markets. But before all of that, let me first introduce the people in the studio with me. Of course, Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang.
Hello.
Well, hello.
So, and over the next, in about 15 minutes, we'll be taking a look at the increasing rate of unemployment in Malaysia with Lawrence Todd at the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, otherwise known as IDEAS. And also on that note, as the MCO and COVID-19 impacts incomes and the economy, should you cut down on your insurance protection plan? This is a question we'll be tackling at 12:30 p.m. on another BFM Personal Finance webinar. So join us on Facebook Live at 12:30 p.m. if that interests you, I guess. So now, before all of that even happens, let's take a look at the markets. And Chuang, what is the Bloomberg telling you at this 7:07 a.m. on a Tuesday morning?
Well, I can tell you how the American share market closed. The S&P was at 2,930 points, up marginally by 0.02%. I think the banks were bettered, but the tech stocks continued to defy gravity. The flight to tech is obviously still going on. And of course, this is something that Joe has talked about before. The Dow Jones is at 24,221 points, down by 0.5%, and the NASDAQ was at 9,192 points, up by 0.8%.
And Noah, how did the Asian markets do on, yesterday?
Yeah, the Nikkei closed up 1.1%, Hang Seng up 1.5%, Shanghai Composite closed down 0.02%, STI closed up 0.8%, probably on the back of news that some of the workers are going to see some freedom right after 12 May. And the FBM KLCI was closed yesterday, of course, for a public holiday.
And for more thoughts on global markets, joining us on the line right now, Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thanks for taking the time to speak to us this morning. Now, US April payout payrolls recorded a loss of 20.5 million jobs. However, 88% of those are supposedly temporary layoffs. Is there the concern that these temporary layoffs will then turn permanent?
Joe? That is a concern. Yes, I mean, that is a concern for sure, that the temporaries become permanent. But we're still trying to work through. We're seeing a lot of states open up right now, so it's not going to happen all at once. But you know, we're looking at historic levels of unemployment here in the United States. The question is, how quickly can states reopen, get people back to the work? It's not going to happen all at once. It's going to be like a second half workout. So, but at least we're beyond flattening the curve. We are reopening, and that's the positive sign from where we were, say, a month ago.
I suppose not all states are equal, right? Which state in particular would you be looking out for?
In states in particular, I mean, I think particularly like Florida, California, New York City, you know, there's a second wave coming. Every pandemic has a second wave. We're seeing that in South Korea. We're seeing that even in Wuhan, the latest numbers in Europe. But I don't think there's going to be a second lockdown because I think the healthcare infrastructure is more prepared. So if we have a second wave, that adds volatility, maybe a risk off, so to speak, certain days. But it doesn't mean we have to lock down the global economy or the U.S. economy. So we're trying to prepare for that. But like, let's be realistic about like what happens next.
Yeah, Joe, the markets are pricing the possibility of the U.S. joining the Europeans and the Japanese and seeing negative rates. What do you think the Fed's going to do in terms of this? Do you think they're going to join the club? Well, whether this is a solution to the crisis?
No, I don't think the Fed goes the negative interest rate route because Sweden, and I admire their central bank, it doesn't work. I mean, well, what's the point? I don't think there's a lot of benefit for that. There's lots of liquidity in the system right now, what the Fed has done in terms of the credit markets, the corporate bond market, muni market. So I don't think that's necessary. But, like, you know, we're kind of like, it's semantics, you know, with a 10-year at, say, 0.7%, I mean, that's pretty close to zero anyway. So I don't think we go there. And the biggest issue, I'll be honest with you, the biggest issue I'm having talking with clients is inflation on the other side, given the fact that we've printed so much money, global supply chain disruptions, the amount of debt that's coming down the pipeline. So believe it or not, some clients are starting to worry about inflation as opposed to deflation.
And Joe, Jerome Powell will be giving an address on the state of the U.S. economy this Wednesday. Are you expecting any insights from the Fed here?
I mean, he's kind of thread the needle in terms of, like, he's done a lot of work. He's confident. The credit markets are working. I think the big issue here is that we need another fiscal stimulus. We could see another $500 billion coming down the pipeline. The Fed balance sheet is through the roof. So everyone knows that. So the biggest issue is, like, when you look into 2021, 2022, the markets are trying to assess, like, how much debt did we accumulate to get out of the crisis? And that, I think, relates to the fiscal stimulus and what the next chairman, Federal Jay Powell or not, has to deal with. So I think the prescriptions, fiscal and monetarily, have worked globally. But as everyone knows, there's a cost at the other end, like 2022, 2023, that will affect asset pricing.
Yeah, John, I mean, the ramifications of that is humongous. I think global central bank debt is somewhere in the region of $24 trillion. That's with a T, not a B. Obviously, the ramifications include hyperinflation, the devaluation of fiat currencies around the world, including especially the US dollar and its position as the reserve currency of the world. You know, 5-10 years out, Joe, what is your prognosis, if you can even have a prognosis at this point in time?
Well, I mean, the dollar is king until there's an alternative, right? I mean, it's not the euro because you see, I mean, the German courts can up, you know, help set monetary policy in Europe, which is kind of like, you know, head scratcher. I think China prefers a closed capital account because it suits their purposes right now. So then they're not ready for prime time, so to speak, albeit the renminbi is a bit more internationalized. So it's all things dollar. Gold is getting a bid here, but we're not going back to the gold standard. So I think, you know, we're working through this process whereby the central bank, the liquidity, the protectionism that comes with that. I still think the dollar is king here for the near term and medium term. Longer term, no one knows. Synthetic currency, SDR from the IMF, I don't see that happening. No one's going to accept that. Bitcoin the same way. It's not backed by any sovereign. So I think the dollar is still king here in the medium term, in short and medium term.
Yeah, Joe, there's also a disturbing negative correlation between where the economy is and where the share markets are, and specifically the FANG stocks, which I think are now 8 or 9 days up in a row. I mean, what's going to happen there? What's going to give first?
Yeah, that's a great question because it's a crowded trade. If there was ever a crowded trade, it's everyone piling into technology. But let's face it, when it comes to earnings, the outlook, the other side, when it comes to e-retailing, when it comes to cloud computing systems, when it comes to everything we're talking about, telemedicine, I mean, technology companies, I mean, we need, you know, they're in more demand than ever before. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. It is a crowded trade. I don't like crowded trades. So, but these companies are actually growing. They're growing their earnings. There's a lot of upside when it comes to demand. They can work through. You know, when you talk about automobiles, airline, retail, those companies, those sectors are still struggling. So the growth area is still technology, albeit I agree with you. It's a crowded trade, so you got to be careful. I would say here, if you got new money, you know, hold on, wait for a pullback in the FANG stocks and then step in, because I do think they're the future. And I would also say that South Korea, Japan, even China, some of these e-commerce plays, that's where you want to be heading in deeper into this year and next.
Well, for some of these sectors that are really not popular now, do you see opportunities, buying opportunities there?
I mean, maybe it would depend on, like, the brand, the core competencies. You know, one thing I expect to see is a lot of consolidations here in the United States, at least mergers and acquisitions. The stronger companies getting bigger, the weaker companies going by the wayside. So I think 21, 22, 23, and we go deeper in the first half of this decade, bigger is going to be better. Bigger people are going to pay up for bigger companies. They have the core competencies, the balance sheets. So whether it's airlines, you know, whether it's pharmaceutical companies, agricultural companies, energy, you know, you want to buy the big companies now because I think they're going to be bigger and stronger later down the pipeline. So bigger is better, albeit, you know, when we come out of recession, we do think the recession is over by the fourth quarter. Small caps is a good place to start allocating money right now. So, you know, you want to look for those beaten up sectors. And I do think small cap is a good place to start putting money to work now because I think we're in the trough of the global recession, U.S. recession, this is where the small caps do well.
All right, Joe, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. And on that note, that bigger is better, let's talk about Indonesia and its airlines. The Indonesian government is finalizing a $1 billion financial bailout plan for its flag carrier Garuda Indonesia to help the company stave off a debt default after the coronavirus forced the airline to ground most of its planes.
Yeah, so I think governments across the world are looking to rescue their national carriers. So I think the plan here will be tabled to investors on May 18 and includes a proposal to restructure the $500 million Sukuk due next month and an option to extend the maturity of the securities by 3 years or a staggered repayment, and also to arrange for a new bridge loan of as much as $500 million US dollars to meet some working capital requirements.
Yes, and as we speak, Chuang is trying to open up the Bloomberg ticker to see how Garuda Indonesia's stock is doing.
Well, it is right now at 230 rupiah, and on the graph, which is usually a good indication of where the share price was in the past, it's now down by quite a lot. Actually, in October last year, it was trading as much as three times as much as it was, or well over 600 rupiah. So it's in a world off right now. And I'm sure
that's not something that is not familiar to the rest of the airlines across the globe or even some of the aircraft makers. Now, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, we speak to Lawrence Todd of Ideas on the increasing rate of unemployment in Malaysia. We've also got a poll running on Twitter right now. Should there be a vote of no confidence against the Prime Minister when Parliament reconvenes? You can let us know on Twitter. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.